Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer 89.5 KVRF presents Dog Talk Radio, hosted by Robert and Michelle Forto. On Dog Talk Radio, we do just that. Talk dogs. Everything from introducing a new puppy into your home to the health and welfare of your canine senior citizen and all points in between. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and this is Dog Talk Radio here at KVRF 89.5 FM in Palmer, Alaska. And sitting with me is our host for Dog Talk Radio, service dog trainer for Alaska Dog Works, and my co-host on Dog Works Radio as well, a dog training show that is available on podcast on dogworksradio.com, Michelle Forto. Michelle, how's it going?
It's going really well. I am proud to say that the sun is shining, and we have broken through a little bit more of the bad weather here in Alaska. It did snow yesterday. It was May 14th. And we had snow.
And, you know, it is spring, and that also means the seasonal allergies are back for me anyway. Michelle calls me Sneezy Dwarf sometimes, so I guess we'll have to deal with the sneezing and the fits every now and then.
Absolutely, but that's okay. We'll get through it. So today on our show, we're going to address a question from a fan of ours from Florida. Her name is Allie, and she asked, how do I choose a dog trainer? So that's going to be one of our topics today. The other topic that we're going to approach will be canine CPR and first aid. It is getting to be that time of the year when everybody is getting out and about with their pets, even here in Alaska. And it can pose some challenges when you're out on a trail. And, you know, what if you don't know what to do if your dog has gotten injured in some sort of way?
That sounds good. And, you know, with people out on the trails, you always got to be prepared for any emergency, whether it be the scuffed up pads on the feet, or, you know, like you said, a choking emergency from swallowing a stick or something like that. So I think canine first aid and CPR is a definite thing to talk about here as we move into spring.
Absolutely. And, you know, just think, if you're out and about and you're not with your own personal dog, you could approach someone who is with their dog and they don't know canine CPR. So it's always a valuable thing to learn.
It is. So the question today on Facebook, our Facebook page is at DogWorks Radio and at DogWorks Radio on Twitter. You can find us there and ask any questions, and we'll make sure that we comment back as soon as we can, or your question may be featured on a future show. We air every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Alaska time. That's 10 p.m. on the East Coast, and available as a podcast on DogWorksRadio.com shortly thereafter.
Absolutely. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. When you're looking for a dog trainer, you need to do your homework and ask some questions. But obviously, the first question to ask is, who do I ask these questions to? I would suggest, first and foremost, talking with your veterinarian about what type of dog trainer they would recommend for you and your dog. Then I would ask my friends and family what dog trainers they've used in the past and see what they recommend. There's obvious dog trainers available nationwide now through big box stores as well as private trainers. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
So today we're going to talk about the questions that you should ask. What are the qualifications of a good trainer? Trainers, first and foremost, must like people and have people skills. What does that have to do with dog training, Robert?
You know, I tell people all the time when I teach people how to become dog trainers that you're either a dog person, a people person, but very rarely are you both a dog person and a people person. So as a dog trainer, you should be both of those. You got to be able not only to interact with the dogs, but the people as well.
Absolutely. And what kind of trainer do you think most people need?
I think they need a people trainer.
Absolutely. I would agree. But, you know, there are instances where the teacher and the subject don't always agree or get along. And in that case, I would always recommend people to find out if they can visit their local training center whether it be a big box store or a private trainer, and see if they can observe a class that's going on. Whether that be a group class or an individual class, it's always great to observe both types of training procedures. A group class trainer undertakes their class in a much different fashion than a private one-on-one trainer.
That is correct.
All right. So what format is best? There are basically four formats, as I was discussing group classes and private lessons. There's also the type of training where you send your dog to the trainer, and they train the dog for you, and then they return the dog. That is called a board and train. There's also types of combinations of this training where you would go to private classes and then attend group class, or send your dog for the board and train and then attend private and group classes as well. You need to decide what works best for you and your schedule.
Right.
What questions should you ask the trainer? There's it depends on your situation. It really, really does. But general information would be, what are the exercises and or procedures used? Does the dog trainer provide handouts or written materials? What kind of equipment is used? Will the trainer have enough information about the type of equipment that you require to use and be able to train you with that equipment? And what I mean by that is simply, you may be a person who requires a certain type of leash or harness or other training apparatus to be used with your dog instead of the traditional flat collar and 6-foot leash.
Right.
So what are some examples, Robert, of different types of training materials?
Well, like you said, the different leashes, the different types of techniques, whether it be positive reinforcement or clicker training, or the amount of time that the trainer spends with each individual client and things of that nature.
And what would you define positive reinforcement as? That's always a question that we undertake.
Positive reinforcement means there is no negative stimulus, meaning that a dog does something, he is rewarded for that behavior.
Absolutely. Some other questions you should ask are, is your family available or able to attend the training? There is a question that some people ask, and that is, what kind of insurance does the trainer carry? You know, a lot of times training centers will carry your standard run-of-the-mill liability insurance, but other times a private trainer that does in-home training, they're not necessarily required to be bonded and insured. It depends on your state, so you would need to look into your local laws about that.
That's exactly right.
Does the trainer give referrals? This one is a toughie for my personal business, because I do give training referrals, but I do that at the discretion of my clientele. I have a strict client confidentiality rule where we do not give out the information of our clientele to any potential clientele ever. If you're interested in finding out more about how someone did with their dog, the best bet would be to check our Facebook page and read about how we did the training with their dog, and then contact that person individually.
Right.
The trainer should know how to identify different temperaments in your dog and be able to educate you on those temperaments and then teach you how to train your dog through different drives. There are drives are prey drive, pack drive, defensive flight, and defensive fight, as well as sex drive. Your trainer should be able to identify those drives and be able to help train your dog through those drives. Many times a dog is identified as aggressive, and this is a label that is thrown around all too often because a trainer does not know how to identify the dog's drives and temperament. Isn't that correct, Robert?
Yes, it is.
And do you find that that's primarily the most overused term in dog training?
I believe it is. You know, either aggressive or saying my dog is trained when he is not.
Absolutely. A dog that can sit is not necessarily trained. That is true. What should you know about the trainer's background and experience? Pretty much you can ask them about their education and if they've worked full-time or part-time, how many hours of training have they done, et cetera, et cetera. All too often you're going to find that there are certain types of trainers out there that have been certified and certain types that have not been certified. All in all, it doesn't really matter to me personally if the trainer is certified, as long as they are following certain guidelines that are nationally recognized.
Right.
So what are a few of the nationally recognized dog training organizations out there?
The Association for Pet Dog Trainers is one. The International Association of Canine Partners is another. The National Association of Dog Trainers is another one, and right off the top of my head, that's all I can recall.
So we've got IACP and CCPDT and APDT. So if you're looking up those online, that there's a lot of acronyms out there, but a certified pet dog trainer typically has a minimum of 300 hours experience in dog training within the last 5 years, with 225 of those hours in actual teaching as a head trainer. So in other words, that means that they can't just have trained their own personal dog for 300 hours. They need to be training people, because dog training is less about the dog and more about the person.
Right.
So that being said, do you necessarily need to know the background of this trainer?
I think you do.
Absolutely. I would tend to agree. Again, I think the best thing you can do is to head on out there, speak with your veterinarian and your neighbors, and visit the dog park and talk to the patrons at the dog park, find out who's doing the training, when and where, and visit their location, same as you would before you decided on enrolling your child in a dog in a daycare, or even at that, enrolling your dog in a daycare. You're going to do some investigation before you choose that place.
Right.
So, do you think that I've covered it pretty well, Robert, or do you have anything else to add for choosing a trainer?
Well, of course, one of the big questions that we always get is price.
Absolutely. Price is negotiable. It depends on where your budget is. It also depends on your demographic location. But all in all, on average, most trainers for private lessons are typically between $25 and $65 an hour. And of course, if you're going with a big box store, the prices are going to be a little bit different. You can usually get 4 to 6 private lessons for a ballpark figure of around $250 to $500.
You know, one of the things we always hear is they say, wait a minute, I don't earn $25 to $65 an hour. How can you charge that?
Well, you're choosing to have someone train your dog as an expert. So you're paying an expert fee. And I do understand that you're not necessarily making $25 to $65 an hour. There's been plenty of years where I didn't make that much an hour. I still don't to this day. But it's something that you have to take into consideration when you get the dog.
That is true. And remember, a dog training business or a dog trainer that comes to your home has that overhead that's included in that $25 to $65 an hour. The advertising, the marketing, the website, the driving to your home, the equipment, the expertise, all of those things are included in the price that they give. So it's very similar to hiring a contractor, a plumber, a mason, a carpenter for your home. They have all that overhead that they need to take into account for the charge that they charge for their services.
Absolutely. And look at it this way. It's just as expensive to take your dog to the vet. You're just not doing it necessarily on a week-to-week hourly rate.
So we are Dog Talk Radio. Dog Talk Radio is on dogworksradio.com and Twitter and Facebook, also at Dogworks Radio. At Dogworks Radio. We're airing here on KVRF 89.5 FM. RadioFreePalmer.org is the website. We're thankful enough to be able to use the studios here and broadcast right here in the Matsu Valley. We just recently talked about choosing a dog trainer in our first segment, and right now we're going to talk about canine first aid and CPR. Michelle?
Absolutely. One of the first things I learned as a dog trainer was how to care for my dog. And that included canine CPR and first aid, along with animal husbandry and things of that nature. Animal husbandry is when you have bred your dog and that dog then has puppies. And there can be some complications that arise from that. But if you weren't raised on a farm like I was and surrounded by farm animals and dealing with those day-to-day life-like activities, then doing some of these CPR first aid type things might not be up your alley. But I implore everyone out there to at least become as educated as possible in how to take care of your pet. So one of the first things that you learn in canine CPR and first aid is?
Airway breathing and circulation.
That is correct. And I'm going to default to Robert on this because Robert is our certified educator for canine CPR and first aid at Alaska Dog Works. So Robert, after you assess the dog's injuries and you make sure that there is an airway available, what do you do next?
Well, of course, you want to make sure that there are no life-threatening injuries. Life-threatening meaning a injury that's going to hamper the dog's chances to live before you get help, whether that be the vet or some other type of professional. Remember, most of these accidents, just like with us human folks, always happens away from the home on Saturdays or Christmas Day. So you have to be prepared at all times, and it's not if it will happen, but when it will happen. You never know when an injury or an illness is going to occur with your dog that you're going to need this immediate assistance.
Absolutely. I always recommend to our students that they keep a emergency kit available in their home and in their car. And in this, it's just like for having it for yourself as well. In this box, you should have a blanket, a yardstick, water, gauze bandages, ACE bandages, so on and so forth. And this is so that you can assess the situation very quickly, immobilize the injured part of the dog, and get them into your vehicle or back into your home in a safe manner for everyone. You should also have a muzzle and a leash in this box.
Any dog that is injured has the potential to become aggressive. Even the most docile dog can bite you if he is injured.
Absolutely. And the blanket isn't just to keep them warm. It's also to help with transporting them if they can no longer walk or if they should not walk. Think of a dog that's been hit by a car. You might be the one person that actually has one of these kits available, and you can get that dog to safety.
That's exactly right.
So when we are performing CPR, how do we breathe in the dog's mouth?
It's called mouth-to-snout breathing. You cover his snout with your nose, you close his mouth, and gently breathe into his nose.
Similar to how you would perform baby CPR, toddler CPR.
That's actually been changed recently in the new CPR regulations. You now breathe into the child's mouth.
That's correct. So if you are not able to clear the airway, is there a maneuver you can do? I believe it's similar to what we call the Heimlich maneuver in people if they're choking.
Yes, it is. You turn the dog upside down and you do abdominal thrust or chest thrust downward with the dog's head facing the ground. Now, this is not an easy task. I always have my students do this in training for CPR, and it's very easy with a very stable plastic mannequin. But when you get a 50-pound squirming dog and you have to lift him up to your head and be able to push down, it's a difficult task.
Absolutely it is. The best trained dog that we ever had that was capable of doing this for our students is our camp counselor dog, Kane. He is our German Shepherd, and our daughter, when she was 11 years old, took this class with him, and he was already full grown, and she was capable of flipping over her 65-pound German Shepherd and demonstrating the Heimlich maneuver. And that poor dog has been flipped upside down so many times. But it's something that you should not practice just out of the blue with any old dog. It does need to be a dog that has been taught how to be turned upside down from puppyhood.
And before you do this Heimlich-type maneuver, make sure that you do a finger sweep in the mouth. Often there will be a stick lodged in there or a rock or something of that nature where you're able to pull it out with a finger sweep. So make sure you do that before you attempt to do the Heimlich. I remember I had a service dog I was training. His name was Tux, and I had taught a group of students how to do this CPR. And lo and behold, as soon as we went up to the yard, shortly thereafter, he had gotten a stick stuck between the roof of his mouth, between his canines, and he was having problems breathing. So we had to go in, and the students had to remove that stick from his mouth, and he was able to do that with very little instruction.
That is correct. And, you know, it might not be a stick. Stick's something that's easily seen. It could be something like a tennis ball that's broken half. And that's not as easy to see. Or, the dreaded nightmare of every woman out there. It is a pantyhose or a sock that has become stuck in their throat as they're trying to eat it. You need to remove these objects very calmly and slowly as to not make more injury on the dog.
That's exactly right.
The calmer you are, the calmer the situation, the calmer the dog.
That's exactly right.
So when we are doing the compressions for CPR on the dog, what location is that, Robert?
It's on the on the dog's side, heart side up.
And which side of the dog is the heart?
That would be the right side.
I believe it is the left side.
The left side. it would be our right if we're looking down.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are all kinds of organizations out there now that are offering canine CPR and first aid, along with their human CPR and first aid classes, which I think is absolutely awesome. One of the best places that you can go to take this course is through the Red Cross.
That's right.
And then also you can look into local trainers that offer this class, but be sure that they are certified and current on the updated CPR procedures for canines. You know, I don't know that many that do cat CPR and first aid, but I'm sure it's pretty similar to what we do with dogs, wouldn't you think?
I would agree. I don't know much about cats in general, but I do think that it should be similar.
Absolutely. So you shared with us one of the reasons why canine CPR and first aid worked for us in our puppy raising service dog program. What can you think of another way to keep your dog safe when you're out and about?
Number one rule is always have a leash on your dog.
That is correct. Especially here in Alaska, as you're getting out there and going hiking and things, it is the time of the year when the black bears and the grizzly bears are coming out of their dens, and they are particularly troublesome this time of year. One of the worst things you can do, and here in Alaska, this is something that happens all too often. We just let our dogs out the door, and we go down the trail, and then we head off for a walk. It's a familiar trail. But, you know, all too often we hear about these black bear attacks, and they're happening more and more as Alaska grows. So keep in mind, if your dog's out there on the trail, they're going to attract a bear that's going to come towards you, potentially harm or kill your dog. The best bet is to keep your dog leashed or stick to trails that are much more urban and easily able to get into a safe area.
That's right.
So as I'm trying not to laugh here at Robert Mays. He is definitely Sneezy Dwarf today. So let's just wrap this up. We covered canine CPR and first aid. I really do think that springtime is the best time to get yourself into one of these classes with your dog. And we also discussed choosing a trainer. If you come to the point where you feel that you cannot afford a trainer, there are a lot of books and videos and YouTube training courses available online, and you know the best bet is to do what you can yourself. And if you do need training, then look at what the American Kennel Club has to offer with Canine Good Citizen training. We did discuss that in a previous show, and typically trainers don't charge as much for Canine Good Citizen training. That is something that you can pull off of their website, go through the items yourself. It's fairly easy, and then obtain a test to be done by a qualified evaluator. And evaluators usually charge a nominal fee for the test, and then it's $8 to get the certification from the AKC.
That's exactly right. So we have one last segment to do here on this week of Dog Talk Radio. Dog Talk Radio is part of DogWorks Radio, DogWorksRadio.com. And I'm going to ask you, Michelle, according to a recent study or poll, I guess it would be, of the top five dog names for both female and male dogs, what do you think the top names are, starting with number five for males?
Ooh. Number five for males right now, I would probably say Ruger.
Nope, it's Jake. What about female?
Females. Bella?
That is actually number one on the list. Bella is the top female dog name in the 2013 poll. Number two, or number four for males, what do you think that is?
You know, I'm trying to go off of what dogs we've had recently. I would say Duke.
Duke is actually number 11 in the list. Number four for males is Bailey.
Really? Bailey for males, huh?
Yeah. Yes, and that name fell down two spots. It was actually number two last year. The number five name for females happens to be Daisy, which has come up a couple in the ranks. It was number seven last year.
Daisy is actually our nephew Jack's dog's name.
It is. Number four for females, what do you think?
I would say probably not Hanson, which is one of our female dogs' names.
It is not Hanson. Number four on the top five dog names for females is Maggie, and that rose from number eight last year. So number four in the top female dogs' names is Maggie. What about number three, very popular name for male dogs? What do you think that is, Michelle? Popular movie back in the 70s.
Oh, goodness. You're going to do that to me.
It was a sport. His wife's name was Adrian.
Nope. I have no idea.
He also played in the movie Rambo.
Sylvester?
No. What was the name of the movie that Sylvester Stallone played in 1976?
Rocky is a popular name.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. Number three on the list is and was last year Rocky for the top five dog most popular dog names. Number three for females. Your favorite Peanut character?
Lucy.
It is Lucy, and that has risen up one rank. It was number four last year. She is now number three for the top five female dog names. It is Lucy. What about number two? We hear this one all the time. Number two for the top dog names for males.
All of the time. That's a toughie because, you know, I'd have to go back with Ruger because we've had four Rugers in the past year.
It is not Ruger. Think again. Another name for friend? Pal?
Buddy?
Buddy. Number two is Buddy.
Talk about lead me on.
Yes, number two is Buddy. Rose from number six last year in top five dog names for 2013. Number two is Buddy. What about number two for female? Popular actress in the 1980s for all of those Breakfast Club-type movies?
Molly.
It is Molly. Number five last year in the top five dog names. Number two this year is Molly. And number one for 2013, most popular dog name. I think we refer to all generic dogs, at least when we're talking about dogs. Number one in the list is?
Max.
It is Max. Number one top dog name of all time in 2013 is Max for the top five dog names.
I will have to say that my clientele have been a whole lot more creative than Max in the recent years.
So let's go down the list a little bit. We'll go down to the top 20 names, starting with number six for males, Charlie, Jack, Toby, Cody, Buster, Duke, Cooper, Riley, Harley, Bear, Tucker, Murphy, Lucky, Oliver, and Sam. Do any of these catch you?
No, but I will have to say the most unique male dog name that we've ever had as a client was Mr. Bingley.
Mr. Bingley. I like that name. I also love the name for a little Airedale-type dog, little curly-haired, wire-haired dog. Rags. I think that's probably my most my.
Well, Mr. Bingley was a Labradoodle, and he's a great dog. So.
It is. So back to the females. We went over the top five. Bella, Molly, Lucy, Maggie, Daisy are the top five, and the rest of the top 20, Sophie is number six, Sadie, Chloe, Bailey, Lola, Zoe, Abby, Ginger, Roxy, Gracie, Coco, Sasha, Lily, Angel, and Princess. Seems to me there's a lot of toy breeds there.
Seems to me, but, you know, we do have, my mom's dog's name is Xena, and she's a Maltese mix, and we call her Xena Warrior Princess, but she totally earned that name.
She has, and we're looking forward to finding out what you guys have named your dogs. Just send us a message on Facebook, at DogWorks Radio, or on Twitter, at DogWorks Radio. What is the name of your dog? Do you come up with unique names for your dogs? Or what holds that special place for that name? You know, Max is being the top name. That is an awful boring name, at least in my opinion. What are some of our dogs' names, some of the unique ones, Michelle? We have about 2 minutes left.
Wow, some of the unique ones. My favorite is the Nightmare Crew, named after the Nightmare Before Christmas movie. We have a foursome named Lock, Shock, and Barrel, and the affably named Burton. Those guys' names are probably my favorite. They're not necessarily the most unique, but they are my favorite names in our kennel.
So there you go, guys. We're out of time. DogWorksRadio.com. You can find all of our archived podcast episodes. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.